Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Now let me strain your ears. There are more things in heaven and earth. That's Alexander Graham Bell's dad reading Shakespeare's Hamlet back in the 1880s at the dawn of transmitted and recorded sound. This hour, we leap through that recorded history.
Long distance.
I've been cut off, operator.
I'm sorry. I'll try to get Lamar 2704 for you. One moment, please.
I mean that literally. The history of recording and transmitting sound from the 1880s to the present moment. These are operators back in the 1940s when the phone system was a government-regulated monopoly with strict rules for connecting and reliability. Remember the old phone? The broadcast system was also growing during the 20th century, filling the air with analog signals like this satellite broadcast of President John F. Kennedy back in the 60s.
I understand that part of today's press conference is being relayed by the Telstar communications satellite to viewers across the Atlantic, and this is another indication of the extraordinary world in which we live.
As the communication system grew, the government had something to say about everything. Licenses for broadcasters, their frequencies, even the dial tone you heard every time you picked up the old telephone. Here's the regulated phone system acting as the chrysalis for a new medium being born. The sound of internet dial-up from the 1980s, a century after Bell, something new and much, much bigger, digital, even if Katie Couric didn't quite understand it as late as 1994.
There's Allison. Can you explain what internet is?
Katie learned, eventually. So did we all. The signal you are hearing now, my voice, digitally encoded and then decoded over a broadcast signal or picked up off a flash disk from an audio file from the cloud. This signal owes its birth to those original primitive tones of Alexander Graham Bell and Thomas Edison. Today we consider the epic choice the federal government is about to make. Is the internet like a radio signal, or like a telephone, or like a broadcast network, or something completely different? The FCC chairman, Thomas Wheeler, announced yesterday that he wants to regulate the internet like a telephone monopoly, creating a system with equal access for all, net neutrality. And now, using the digital and so far unregulated medium of Skype, I'm connecting with Victor Picard, assistant professor at the Annenberg School for Communications at the University of Pennsylvania. Welcome, Victor.
Thanks for having me, John.
What do you think has happened to our challenges in regulating communications as the technology has gotten better and better and better, looking at the big arc back to the 1930s?
Yes, well, there's been an interesting evolution, but in many ways, I would argue that it hasn't changed a whole lot. You have these periodic critical junctures when we have new media, and as a society, we need to figure out, how do we regulate this media? What's the social contract? What's the role of the FCC in their regulatory oversight?
When you look at Wheeler's proposal, the chairman of the FCC, do you see this keeping with the tradition, keeping with the idea that things don't change, or do you see it as a break?
I see more parallels than ruptures and discontinuities, but I would say there's been interesting differences because whereas in the 1940s, which is what I focus on, you had a fairly aggressive FCC that tended to be anti-monopoly. With Tom Wheeler, I don't think that was his initial instincts, but yet he was pushed by public pressures to essentially do a very similar New Deal-like measure against internet monopolies.
And so the internet in this net neutrality view is that it becomes like the air. It's an absolute, I mean, it's an Uber common carrier. Whereas private companies really want to look at the internet as more of a medium, like a commodity, like wheat, gigabytes are going to be something that's a fee-for-service kind of business almost. How much of a clash is that?
I think it's a significant clash, and I agree with you that from a business standpoint, the internet is more like a widget. It's something to be bought and sold on the market. But of course, from society's perspective, democracy depends on this, and we have to take that into consideration as we devise policy for it.
If this proposal is accepted, what are the challenges going forward, do you think, for regulators and for Americans in figuring out the best use of their own internet?
Well, there will be a number of ongoing challenges. We already know that the Republican-led Congress is seeking to undercut the FCC's regulatory authority. There have already been public announcements that AT&T, for example, will take this to court. There will be continued scrutiny as to whether there are any loopholes in these net neutrality protections. And then finally, the concern is that on February 26th, the public may declare victory and tune out when I think we need, if history gives us any lessons, we know that we need continued public engagement around these issues. Media policy is not the sexiest issue to the extent that it's even covered in the media. It often sounds overly technical and wonky. But when the public realizes what's at stake, they will engage. And I think we saw that when you, with nearly 4 million people writing into the FCC in response to their open internet rules.
As we get beyond this question of the FCC and net neutrality, how difficult is it to regulate companies that provide internet service versus regulating behavior on the internet among hundreds of millions of users?
Put that way, it would sound that it would be easier to regulate these handful of companies. I mean, we're really talking about monopolies and duopolies in most situations. But I think what we also need to be thinking about is this idea that we need public alternatives. So, for example, municipal broadband could potentially introduce competition into the internet service markets. And President Obama has come out quite forcefully in favor of this, as is the FCC.
Do you think the city of Chattanooga, which is a very progressive city on the question of internet access, should be a competitor, should be a model for internet access in terms of services designed by a Verizon or an AT&T?
From my point of view, yes. I think any competition at this point would be welcome. Right now, the U.S. Broadband speeds are quite atrocious when compared to many other democratic nations, and this stems from simply a lack of competition in the broadband market.
Victor Picard is assistant professor at the Annenberg School of Communications at the University of Pennsylvania. He's the author of America's Battle for Media Democracy, The Triumph of Corporate Libertarianism, and The Future of Media Reform. Victor, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me on the show, John.
Let's pick up on one point raised by Professor Picard regarding Congress and the FCC. There is a move afoot in Congress to, by law, take the FCC out of regulating internet service altogether. Lawmakers behind this initiative have a very different idea of how the internet, private corporations, and consumers should interact. Todd Zwillick, Takeaway Washington correspondent, is with us. Welcome, Todd.
Hi, John.
So if the FCC is out of the picture, what does the regulatory environment look like based on this initiative afoot in Congress?
Yeah, well, it's not that Republicans want the FCC completely out of the picture. They just don't want what they're calling here a power grab by an agency that they say is using antiquated rules and antiquated regulations that apply to, you know, the big phone companies of sort of yesteryear and applying them to the internet. So what Republicans have been wanting to do, and there's a couple of proposals floating around, is they understand the public outcry against pay-to-play and internet fast lanes. And Republicans are well aware that most consumers and a lot of companies just don't want that. And they are volunteering to say, look, we can effectively outlaw pay-to-play. We can outlaw internet fast lanes and kind of leave it there. We don't want a broad, what's called Title II, and that's a little bit jargony, but that's the thing that bounces around Washington these days. We don't need broad Title II authority, which is the authority that the FCC wields over the big telecoms. We don't need that for the internet. So that's what we'd rather do.
Let's hear some of the voices in this debate. Here's the House Judiciary Committee Chairman Bob Goodblatt in an interview from September of last year.
We need to be very careful that we don't throw out the baby with the bathwater by inviting the FCC in to regulate the internet. And therefore, I believe the way to keep it open is through appropriate use of our antitrust laws, not through FCC regulation.
Of course, using antitrust laws is a form of regulation, too. That's Republican Bob Goodblatt from Virginia. How does he symbolize this sort of battle on the Republican side?
Yeah, what you're hearing there is sort of the Republican angst over what they're calling a power grab from the FCC, because they say the FCC has jurisdiction here, but we want it to be narrow and we want it to be focused. We don't want it to be broad. We don't want them delving into interconnection agreements between companies like, you know, Netflix and somebody like Comcast. That's up to them. You know, we don't want the government delving into those rules. Meanwhile, John, and this isn't going to surprise you, Democrats are absolutely gleeful. They've been leaning on the FCC to go big here. They've been leading on them ever since 2010, when courts threw out the FCC's original efforts to regulate this stuff. Listen to Ed Markey. He's a senator from Massachusetts.
Do you want to return to the days when a few telecommunications companies, which today we would call the broadband behemoths, control and allow them to control the avenues that we use to communicate? Or do you want a free and dynamic open market where the best ideas survive and thrive?
And it's interesting there that Markey frames this as sort of big telecom versus the consumer, whereas Greg Walden, a representative, a Republican from Oregon, casts this as sort of modern versus ancient.
We have a very important choice to make between letting three very smart and capable but unelected people at the FCC, a majority of the commission, use a statute written for another era to cobble together a regulatory scheme, and undoubtedly will end up in court for years in litigation, providing no protections but much uncertainty. Or we can do our job and craft a new law for this century through the open and transparent legislative process.
They're marching through history there on Capitol Hill. Todd Zwillick, thanks so much.
You got it, John.
Todd Zwillick, takeaway Washington correspondent.